Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
And we are back, Crossover NBA podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Beck and I are going to start the show a little bit later on. We'll be joined by Nick Wright from First Things First, the resident Laker and LeBron defender, the resident Nikola Jokic hater, and he is going to join me for a few minutes on the show. But Beck, I want to start in the Jokic sphere here. I was in Philadelphia on Monday night for the Embiid versus Jokic clash. I was hoping to walk away from that game with maybe more of a clear idea of who should earn my first place vote for MVP at the end of this season. I didn't leave with that. Both of them played great games, different games, but great games. Denver won, but that had more to do with Bones Highland going crazy. And, you know, good for Bones Highland doing that on national TV, doing it like 45 minutes from where he grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, doing it in front of more than 500 people that came to see him. Now, sometimes when you hear like there were like 500 people in the crowd, you think that's an exaggeration. I can tell you it was not. There was at least 500 people there for Bones Highland in Philadelphia on Monday night. And it was pretty cool to see, to watch him kind of go off like that and all, and really getting the recognition for, you know, not only what he's accomplished, but everything he's gone through over the course of his life. But, you know, Embiid versus Jokic, it lived up to expectations. Embiid had 34 points. Jokic had 22. He also had 8 assists with that. The 8 assists were all of the remarkable variety. I mean, the guy is as gifted a passer as we have in the NBA. I mean, I'm kind of done at this point, Howard, saying that Jokic is the best passing big man in the NBA. He's got to be in contention as the best passer in the NBA, period, point blank. I mean, he's that good and throws passes with that type of precision. So I'll give it to you there. What did you think of Jokic versus Embiid, and did that do anything to influence how you plan to vote?
Real quick, two things. One, Jokic is one of the greatest passers in NBA history, period. Not just this era, this season, or whatever. Like, Jokic is one of the best passers we've ever seen at any position. You want to say he's the best passing big man of all time? I think there's a case, and he's one of the best passers at any position, period, ever. He's that good. And last night was just another example. The second thing, great story by you on Bones Highland. I didn't know his backstory That's the kind of thing that maybe biographical sketch and the awful tragedy he and his family had been through, I'm sure, made the rounds during draft season. I somehow missed that. So what a wonderful night. That's one of those things where, like, the universe, everything just kind of clicks into place at the right moment, that he's that close to home, having a great game like that on national TV in a big game. Just wonderful all the way around, and all the people there that were there to see him, including the folks from the fire department. Folks, go read Chris's story. You'll learn the backstory if you weren't aware. We didn't learn anything, Chris, in terms of the MVP race. Like, yeah, I mean, it's funny because people sometimes say, well, you need like some signature game that's going to define. No, we don't. We've had plenty of seasons where there's no one game or one night or one matchup that defines the MVP race. But when you get the two guys who are I don't want to say they're co-favorites because Giannis is in this as well, but the two guys who are getting, I think, the most of the attention at the moment, and we're late in this season, and it's East-West, so you don't see them play each other very often, and they actually play the same position, so they're guarding each other. You do go in kind of hoping, can we get one more data point tipping it one way or the other? Give me something else to go on. And it was a draw for all intents and purposes, and the game was decided by a supporting cast. Like, I know everybody spent the entire season dumping on Jokic's supporting cast because of the absence of two, not quite all-stars, but two all-star potential type guys in Murray and Porter has meant that's part of his MVP case, right? But his supporting cast is much better than given credit for. And last night was an example of them coming through at the right time. Embiid's got better talent around him and they could not pull it out last night on their home court. So I would say the only real things we learned coming out of it are that I think Jokic's supporting cast is pretty solid, better than it's been given credit for. And the Sixers bench, not the supporting cast overall, because that could mean also any non-Embiid and Harden players, but the Sixers bench in particular, which got its butt kicked by the Nuggets bench, is concerning for a team that has title aspirations.
And that was a full-strength Sixers team, Howard. Like, that's the team they're going to have. Granted, they'll be...
Danny Green just got back, so we'll give him a little bit of, like, a semi-asterisk.
Yeah, that's fine. But, like, you know, those are the guys. Like, there's no more help on the way for Philadelphia the rest of this season. I'm with you. It didn't tilt my vote one way or the other. I continue to be dazzled by what Jokic can do passing the ball. But I was equally as impressed by Embiid, who went 41 minutes the night before in an overtime win over Orlando. They fly home. He plays 36 minutes in the game against Denver, against the reigning MVP, and he posts 34 points. I mean, he was brilliant. One other thing, by the way, on the supporting cast of Denver, I continue to be impressed with Tim Conley and how he's able to identify these guys. I mean, you look at that team, and it has largely been constructed of, you know, late first and early second round picks. I mean, Jokic, we know, story's been told, he was a second round draft pick years ago. But I'm watching Bones Highland out there, who's the 26th pick in this year's draft. Anybody could have had him at any point in time in the draft. You've got Will Barton out there, who was a scrap heap signee. Monty Morris out there, who was, I believe, a draft pick late by Denver. Michael Porter Jr., who's not there. I mean, they took a flyer on him. He worked out. Jamal Murray, he was a higher pick, sure. And of course, Jokic as well. But they just find talent, man. Like, that's how you win. Like, you know, winning in the NBA, it's complicated, but it's not, right? Like, it's finding guys like that, like Bones Highland, like Monty Morris, like Will Barton, who can play. And you plug them in around, you know, one superstar to give yourself a chance to win. Now, when I watch Philadelphia, and I've watched every game of the Harden era, the ones that he's played in anyway, they're missing something there, right? Like, Embiid's great. Harden's going to be fine. He had a bad turnover at the end of that game, but Harden's a tremendous offensive player. They're not very athletic, Howard. Like, and that's something that stands out to me watching them. They've got some great defenders. Embiid is a top-level defender. Matisse Thybulle is an elite defender, but they're just kind of missing that sort of 6'8", 6'9", wingy defender. Kind of like, I mean, I look at Aaron Gordon on that Denver team, and he was sick in that game, didn't play all that well. But that's the type of player it feels like Philadelphia is missing. Like that guy that can match up with multiple different wing players like a Kevin Durant, like a Giannis, like a Jimmy Butler. I mean, Butler, I guess Tybalt could take him, but you know, that kind of guy. They just don't have that. And
you mean like a Ben Simmons type?
I mean, yeah, kind of, frankly. A Ben Simmons type on that team. Like that's a piece that's missing. Now, are they going to be so good offensively with Harden and Embiid that it's not going to matter? Is Tybalt enough to be a stopper on the likes of Durant and Giannis and others, like Tatum too in the playoffs? Maybe, but when I watch that Sixers team, I see that. I notice that out there on the floor, that they're not especially athletic and they are lacking that, you know, longer wing defender.
I mean, listen, when Danny Green is fully, you know, look, Danny's got a lot of miles on him. Let's, you know, be clear. But like when Danny Green is healthy and at his best and he just got back, him combined with Thibault and then with Embiid, you know, protecting the rim and the paint and being a mobile big, like that's a pretty good alignment. And you've got two guys like Danny Green's not as rangy as Thibault. He's not as rangy as, say, Ben Simmons. He's not as rangy as maybe Andrew Wiggins. But like between Danny Green and Thibault, I think you've got two guys who can guard the best perimeter player and or ball handler on the opponent, and then Embiid cleans a lot of stuff up. Like, I think they'll be okay defensively. They didn't get a lot of punch out of their supporting cast, so the offense, I thought, was an issue last night. But, yeah, I mean, I think the Sixers are still kind of figuring some things out. I mean, they looked unbeatable for the first four or five games with Harden playing, and then they got their butts kicked by the Nets, and it feels like they're still, like, you know, a little woozy from that butt kicking. And we'll see. We're in such a small sample size on the Sixers since the trade that I think we're prone to a lot of overreactions. The Harden Embiid 1-2 punch is formidable, and I still think like that team, as much as Milwaukee, who just got Brooke Lopez back, as much as Miami, as much as the whatever the heck the Nets are by the time the playoffs arrive, if they make the playoffs, I think the Sixers have as, you know, I don't know if I want to say as good a shot as any. They are in it. They're definitely in it. Nights like last night and nights like the game against Brooklyn raise concerns, different concerns for each of those games, but they raise concerns. I do think this MVP race, by the way, is just going to come down to like the last night of the regular season. It's looking that way. And again, it's not just Jokic versus Embiid. I think Giannis is firmly in this too. I do think it's a three-man race. I don't think it's probably anybody outside of that at this stage, with so little season left. But I think we're going to need every, you know, data point left between now and April, whatever the heck the end of the regular season is.
Yeah. For me, when it comes to MVP, and this is just my kind of viewpoint, what it's probably going to come down to me, at least when it comes to Jokic, is how high can he get Denver in those standings? Like,
for
can
sure.
he get the Nuggets like to three before the end of the season? Because if they're the third seed and they were missing Jamal Murray for the entirety of the season and Michael Porter Jr. for most of the season, I'm going to have a hard time not voting for him. I understand Embiid has gone through some of that stuff himself, playing without Ben Simmons all year long. That is in his pro column, but all the Denver has gone through with the health issues of their star players, their two big time scorers out of that lineup, and to have them be a third seed in the Western Conference would be tough. Would be tough to shake him off the top spot in my ballot.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I want to move on to Brooklyn and what we saw over the weekend when it comes to Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, as most people listening to this podcast know by now, is now allowed into the Barclays Center, can sit in the stands, unvaccinated, and without a mask. That's because New York has lifted its vaccine mandate. The Barclays Center has lifted its vaccine mandate. So anything goes at this point in Barclays. However, Kyrie cannot play because the city has not lifted its vaccine mandate for private businesses. If you are operating a private business, I believe of a certain size in New York, you have to have your employees vaccinated. So Kyrie cannot play for the Nets. However, over the weekend, he appeared at the ACC tournament, watching Duke play in the ACC tournament from a near courtside position. On Sunday, nationally televised game, he appeared sitting courtside to watch the Nets win over the Knicks. And that, you know, fueled the conversation about whether or not Kyrie Irving should be allowed to play. If he's allowed to sit in the stand, some people reasoned he should be allowed to play. I saw Doris Burke on the air, described Kyrie's appearance there as visual absurdity. You had LeBron James firing off a tweet with all caps and whatever he likes to do on social media. And Kevin Durant, after the game, you know, put the pressure squarely on the shoulders of the mayor, Eric Adams, saying effectively that the mayor, in keeping this vaccine mandate in effect, was looking for attention. Now, KD, in fairness, walked some of that back the next day, you know, said he knows the mayor has a tough job to do there and all that. But he said it at the time, and that created a lot of waves within the basketball community. So, Howard, give me your reaction. You're a Brooklynite. You're a New Yorker. Give me your reaction to watching Kyrie appear twice at Barclays Center, not play in the game on Sunday, and then the subsequent fallout from it.
I'm really having a hard time summoning the ability to give a crap, to be honest. Let me be clear, Chris. Nothing happened. Like, some stuff happened, but nothing happened. There was nothing, there's no news here. This was theater. This was bad theater. Kyrie showed up so he could thumb his nose at the mayor and the city and the mandate. He didn't show up for any other reason. He showed up so he could show people up. The Nets then aided and abetted him by letting him go in the locker room, which violated NBA rules, which got them fined $50,000 because he was not there as a player. As a player, he wasn't allowed to be there as an employee. So he was there as a visitor, and visitors are not allowed in NBA locker rooms right now. So they got fined. But nothing has changed. There's nothing new. Kyrie still won't get the vaccine that all of his teammates and all of his coaches and every single Nets employee and 98% of all players across the league have had. He still won't get it. New York City still hasn't changed the law. And Kyrie is still today, as he was the last several months, costing the Nets potentially a shot at the title. So this is the same as it was in October, the same as it was in November and December and January and February. And we are here in mid-March discussing what I consider to be almost a non-story. Nothing has changed. The city hasn't changed its stance, even with the new mayor. Kyrie's never changing his stance. That's clear. He's never explaining his stance coherently either. I guess we'll go for the rest of time without ever really understanding why he's taken this stance. That's it. Nothing has happened. We are in the same stalemate we've been for 5 months. I'm so over this stupid story. It's nonsensical. And yes, before I close, I know the city's continued mandate at this level, given they've relaxed so many other things, doesn't make sense. Kyrie being able to be there as a spectator, but not as a player, doesn't make sense. I get it. He alone has the ability to change this with one decision, which is what I wrote 2 months ago, and nothing has changed on that in that regard either. Kyrie could play anytime he wants to, get the shot. He doesn't want to. Fine, deal with the consequences. I'm done with this. It's a stupid story.
Unfortunately, though, Howard, we're going to be talking about it for a few months now because the Nets are going to go into the playoffs, whether it's in the play-in or as just hanging over their heads. And with the fact, this is a fact, that with Kyrie Irving fully eligible, with Durant playing the way he is, Curry playing the way he is, presumably some version of Ben Simmons back in that rotation, are among a handful of top championship contenders. Without him, they're not. It's as simple as that. Most likely, will get bounced out.
Chris, if Kyrie's not available, I'm not guaranteeing they're making the playoffs. They may get bounced in the play-in.
Right.
Especially if they're playing Toronto. In Toronto, where Kyrie can't play either.
I wrote this earlier in the week, like, you know, with Kyrie, without Durant off night away. You touched on this. Like, people are obviously out there saying, like, it's ridiculous to have Kyrie sitting courtside, breathing the same air as all the fans in that building and not able to play. Why can he sit effectively on the bench and not play on the floor? There is one very good reason. Of course, all things being equal, New York City would allow Kyrie Irving to play. I think that's true. But all things are not equal because 1 month ago, New York City fired over 1,400 city employees on one day for not getting vaccinated. That was 1% of the city workforce. It was the largest mass termination in the U.S. The mayor of New York simply can't turn around a month later and go, you know what? It's going to let Kyrie play. We'll make an exception for Kyrie. Or worse, we're going to just eliminate the mandate altogether. Because 1,400 people just lost their jobs less than a month ago, or a little over a month ago at this point. You can't do it. You can't just flip the script because a lot of people want Kyrie Irving to play. And look, the mayor came out and basically said as much. He had some remarks on Sunday that I was watching on social media, and some guy in the back of him is heckling him outside saying, let Kyrie play. And the mayor turns to the guy and says, Kyrie can play whenever he wants. Get a shot. Get vaccinated. You can get back out there in the core in a very short period of time. So with 1,400 people out of their jobs last month because they refused to get vaccinated. And by the way, that's only the number that was reported in the public sector. Those are city employees. Who knows how many more lost their jobs in the private sector because they would not get vaccinated. Because of that, the city is not just going to lift this mandate. I just, based on everything I've seen out of New York City Mayor Eric Adams, and I'm kind of a prisoner in a lot of ways of what I'm reading and seeing in his public remarks, I don't get any sense, Howard, he's going to change his mind. The Nets are going to go into the playoffs with Kyrie Irving only eligible for road games and only eligible for road games if those road games are not played in Toronto.
Yeah, it certainly looks like that will be the case. We are rapidly, rapidly moving out of this era of all these pandemic restrictions. And so any given day, who knows whether New York might just wipe the books of everything else. But you're right. The optics are really bad right now. And Eric Adams, the mayor, is a politician and a new one to this office to boot. The idea that he would come in and in the wake of, as you point out, whatever the number was, 1,000 plus 1,300 public employees losing their jobs for refusing it, and then making a very public exception for a pro athlete just because of the public pressures or because of the optics, like, the optics better on the one hand, it wouldn't look as absurd to have this kind of weird double standard where he can sit in the stands but can't play. But bad optics in terms of all these people who just lost their jobs over this mandate, and you're going to suddenly carve out an exception that would appear to be for one person, one wealthy, entitled person playing professional basketball. Like, that does not look good. And you have to think that the political realities are what's keeping this in place. So no, the Nets can't count on that. I think they've been trying to count on that. I think they've been hoping and wishing and, you know, rubbing rabbit's feet for the last several months that this would happen before the postseason, but it's not looking that way. And so, as I say, we're where we've been all along. We've been the same place we've been since October when Kyrie Irving went on Instagram Live and gave this rambling presentation that did not exactly explain why he was refusing the vaccine. But again, he has put himself in this position. He has put the Nets in this position. He could solve it anytime he wants to. I don't know what else there is to say about this.
Yeah, and Howard, you mentioned that Eric Adams is a politician, and in some corners of the country, you know, caving to the athlete makes political sense. You get people on your side by doing that. I don't think that's the case in New York City. Like, there are plenty of Nets fans out there, enraged Nets fans, that Kyrie can't play. I would imagine, and you're more in touch with the pulse of New York than I am, but like, I would imagine that there are far more deeply liberal people that are livid that Kyrie isn't vaccinated and would be more upset at Eric Adams for lifting the mandate. Plus, there's the cross-section of people that lost their jobs and the people close to them that are saying, well, you're going to flip-flop on this because Kyrie Irving told you to? Like, it seems to me right now, and again, I'm just looking at this from afar, it seems to me right now that politically, it doesn't make any sense for Eric Adams to change his mind on Kyrie Irving, not before the end of this season.
Wouldn't seem to. It wouldn't seem to. I mean, as I say, like, you know, the fact.
Am I reading that wrong? Do you think I'm reading that wrong? I don't.
No, no. There is no reason to, other than the fact that, you know, infection rates are way, 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 way down, and hospitalization rates are way down, and all that. Like, so it's more a matter of like, if you know, if we're talking about following the science, following the data, and all that stuff. Does the city come to a point where there's more of a political will and more of a case to be made that you should just wipe away the rest of the restrictions, whatever's left? But I don't know.
They fired so many people. That, like, there's no, you can't walk that back. You just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. They're in a difficult position in that sense. I mean, listen, I said back in December, I thought the Nets should trade Kyrie Irving. As it turns out, they ended up having to trade James Harden instead, in large part because of Kyrie Irving, by the way. Mm. But I always thought they should trade Kyrie because he had more value to a team that could use him 100% of the time than to the Nets. And look, the guy is still amazing, and we've seen what he can do when he's on, and he and KD together, it's a formidable 1-2 punch. And that game against Philadelphia was really impressive, but he may very well cost them a shot at the title or even a shot at making the playoffs. And that's just where we are.
All right. Speaking of shots at the title, I want to talk for a minute about Golden State. The Warriors beat the Wizards on Monday. Draymond Green's first game back in a couple of months. Green was Draymond. I think he was a plus 24 in that game. Steph Curry playing opposite Green looked like the guy we saw while Draymond was playing. He had 47 points in that game. The ball seemed to be moving a lot crisper. The defense was a lot sharper with Draymond out there kind of flying around doing his versatile defensive thing. It was fun to watch him back out there, Howard. That back injury has been lingering and made you wonder, you know, would he be back? What would he look like when he came back? Well, it looks like he waited till he was at full strength to come back, and you know, it looks like he's going to be the old Draymond when they get into the playoffs in about a month. Now, all that being said, it has been a bit of an uneven season for the Warriors. They still sit inside that top four in the Western Conference. Steph Curry has not had his best shooting season. In fact, it's been, I think, his worst shooting season, statistically anyway. Klay Thompson started to bounce back, but he's not quite been Klay yet and may not be before the end of the year. So I'll ask you this. Does a returning Draymond make Golden State a championship contender?
I think they were already a contender. We saw that in the first couple of months of the season, and yes, they've cooled off considerably since that first couple months, but by record and by results and by the strength of their start to the season, by strength of their personnel, by the fact that they've actually increased their depth along the way in a variety of ways. We can get to that, but they're deeper now, and in a lot of ways more impressive now than they were at the start of the season, because of the development of you know, Kuminga and Moody, because of Poole's continued emergence, because of Wiggins's, you know, obviously, again, another guy who has cooled a little bit, Wiggins, but still, they're just incredibly solid, and they've got, I think, very good depth. They were already a contender. In our notes before the show, I phrased it as, you know, hey, are they now the favorites to win the West? And my answer to that would be, like, favorites feels too strong. That would be kind of disrespectful to the Suns, given, you know, that Phoenix is the defending Western Conference champs and that Phoenix has a massive 7.5 game lead on the Warriors and Grizzlies, and they've got the best record in the NBA. The Suns are on pace for 65 wins. And so I wouldn't vault the Warriors over them as favorites, but like if we put the question this way, Warriors at full strength, whatever that means right now, versus the Suns, if and when they meet in a series, I think I lean Warriors. And that's no disrespect to the Suns. It's more a matter of respect to who the Warriors are, what they've accomplished. And no, they're not the Warriors of 2018 or 2015. But, man, Draymond Green adds so many dimensions to them offensively and defensively. This season has been uneven in part because they had the Draymond portion of the schedule at the beginning with no Klay. Then Klay comes back and Draymond's out. Like last night's the first time those guys have meaningfully shared the court since 2019. So I think we should give it some time. But I do think that the combination of Curry, a still improving and getting his legs back under him, Klay, and Draymond, and I think a really stout supporting cast now. Who knows what Weissman may contribute to them. He's just did some rehab stints in the G League. And Klay's heating up, by the way. Klay's last four games,
yeah.
24, averaging 24 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2+ assists, 37% on threes, which is good for most people, but bad for Klay. Like, you know, Klay's a lifetime 40% three-point shooter, and so he's not quite there yet on his three-point shooting, but last four games, definitely finding himself. And him and Draymond being out there at the same time makes life easier for everybody. Like, Klay will get more open shots because of Draymond. Steph will get more open shots because of Klay and Draymond. Like the synergy of those three that we really have not seen since 2019. That's what we keep an eye on, I think, over these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I agree. In a mythical series right now between the Warriors and the Suns, I'd lead Warriors as well. And that's, I'm basing that in part on the fact that I think the Golden State's going to get even better as this month progresses. Draymond getting back in the mix, Andre Iguodala getting back in the mix. I'm choosing to have very low expectations, however, for James Wiseman. I mean, the guy's played like less than half of one season and not a single game this year. I can't expect, you know, a 20-year-old to go out and, you know, perform against DeAndre Ayton in the playoffs. Like, I'm not banking on that. But I do think that Golden State has enough muscle on that front line. I mean, Kevon Looney is really good for them. Draymond can play the five in a small ball type of lineup, create fits matchup-wise for other teams. What worries me about Klay, and I've watched a lot of Warriors games since he's been back, they're obviously a much more interesting team with him back in the mix. He's not the same defensive player that he was before the injuries. And look, that's to be expected. Like, you don't come back after a two-year layoff and look like the same guy. It just doesn't happen. But they've done a decent job, I thought, of kind of hiding him on more plotting players out there. He's had a couple of moments. I was watching the game against the Clippers about a week or so ago, and he really locked down Reggie Jackson in that game. That was pretty good Klay defense there. But getting into the playoffs, like, can you expect Klay to be a stopper? And if he's not, is Andrew Wiggins going to be a stopper? Wiggins has come back down to earth since the hot start too, Howard. Like, his three-point shooting, I think, was 41% before the All-Star break. It's like mid-30s, maybe even low-30s right now. So, you know, how reliable is he going to be in the postseason, I think, is an open question. But you can, look, to spring it back full circle to Klay, I mean to Draymond, you can see the impact. Like, he's a facilitator out there on the offensive end. He's constantly moving. He's constantly moving the basketball. Steph clearly thrives playing opposite him. He makes everybody better on that end without putting up big numbers. And defensively, I mean, Draymond still thinks he's defensive player of the year. The guy missed, what, 31 games with his injury. He still thinks he's defensive player of the year. So he's brimming with confidence what he's still able to do on the defensive end. So I'd probably call them co-favorites, but in a seven-game series with Phoenix, if that's how it played out, right now I'd lean towards Golden State. I really would.
And I agree with you. Like, the concern with Klay is not so much the shooting. You figure he's going to make enough, especially of his threes. But the lateral mobility, the ability to keep up with guys at a variety of positions, you know, guard all these different shapes and sizes of players that he used to in the past. Is he going to get back to that? But in the time that he's been gone, they've had Wiggins kind of emerge in that perimeter defender role. They've got other guys out there. I mean, Gary Payton second is a nice defender, albeit smaller. Kuminga, kind of an all-purpose defender, athletic beast to throw out there. Like, they've just got all these different dimensions now that they certainly didn't have in the weird, you know, two-year interlude while they were kind of, you know, waiting for Klay to get healthy and you know, rebuilding themselves. Moody gives them another shooter and some length. They're interesting. They just got a lot of stuff to play with. And I don't know if it all, you know, amounts to a championship in the end, but, you know, that's kind of how the strength and numbers group came together all those years ago, was, you know, a little Sean Livingston, a little Andre Iguodala, you know, a little Andrew Bogut. Like, it was just the better than the, you know, some of their parts at the beginning until, you know, and look, obviously Steph was a superstar in the making at that moment. And Klay was emerging, or had emerged as one, you know, they'd already become the best shooting backcourt in NBA history, right? But there was all these other elements to them that made them who they were. And this is a different version of that. Is it as good as that? I don't know, but it's possible. I will say this, quick just statistical check here on the Draymond effect. Before he went down, they were number one in defensive efficiency by a lot, by the way. In the time without him, they fell to 10th overall, but still, you know, 10th is not bad, but they were number one by a lot. When he was playing offensively, it's been kind of a push with him or without him. And I think just kind of the trade-off of losing him and his playmaking, but gaining Klay maybe and some other stuff. But you noted it at the top of this segment, Draymond plus 24 in 20 minutes in his first game back. And an individual game of plus minus is not the most telling thing, but it's not nothing either.
No, you're right. It's going to be interesting to see how well he plays over the next couple of weeks. By the way, did you catch Draymond pontificating at the media after that game? Did you catch his speech there?
I did not.
You didn't? Oh, he was quite upset at someone in the Bay Area media about something they wrote, and he had an interesting speech that he gave before walking off and not taking any questions there. So
I'd recommend
you check that out. I mean, it's why the Warriors and Bay Area reporters have a history there a little bit. And I remember when, like, Ethan Strauss and KD went at it like a few years back over something, and now it's somebody else in that press corps
is funny, because Draymond is as good of a media guy, and I don't just mean like he's skilled,
in the media. He's got a podcast. Well, he's in the media. Nah,
I mean, and he's on TNT and all that. He's great at being a media member. He's better than most of us at this. Maybe better than all of us at this. But I don't mean just that. I mean, Draymond is great with the media. Like, the Warriors and the Bay Area media, the Warriors and the NBA media in general have a great working relationship, because Raymond Ritter and his staff do a phenomenal job. They're very open. They're very accommodating for, you know, a lot of our needs, our stories, interviews, you know, over the years. And Draymond, I think, is central to that. He's had a great rapport with Bay Area media. So I'm actually surprised. I mean, it's not, look, we know Draymond, you know, he's opinionated and can get, you know, ticked off at things now and then. You know, I wouldn't put much on it. You know that he's a guy at the end. He loves having the back and forth. He loves engaging with the media. I'm sure they'll be fine, whatever it was. But yeah, now I got to go look at that.
And I think he actually wound up speaking to reporters in the hallway afterwards. He just wasn't speaking to the media from the podium at that moment. So ended pretty quickly, it seems like. All right, Howard, good stuff, man. We'll do it again next week. And when we come back, my conversation with Nick Wright.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Nick Wright is the co-host of First Things First on FS1. He also has a new podcast called What's Right, where you can undoubtedly listen to compelling segments like It's Not LeBron's Fault, and Is Jokic Even the Best Serbian in the NBA?
Wow.
You can subscribe.
That's how
you can
we're
subscribe.
Starting.
We're starting. I'm not doing my intro yet. You can subscribe to What's Right everywhere you get your podcast, and Nick joins me here on the show. I figured we'd get started, you know.
It's also, by the way, a YouTube show. You can also follow us on YouTube. It's like a fully produced television show, but also in audio form. And my sidekick on it, not quite my co-host on it, but my sidekick on it is my son. And
yeah,
so,
I saw that.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so the Bron's really following in my footsteps with the whole trying to work with your son thing. Like, I'm the one getting the ball rolling on that there. But where do you want to start? You want to start with, I mean, people are mad at me today about Jason Tatum. They're legit mad at me.
I saw that. I don't entirely disagree.
Disagree with me. No one actually disagrees.
No, I do disagree in part because I think there were several names on that list I would put Tatum ahead of. You had Paul George on that list. I would put Jason Tatum right now ahead of Paul George. I think Paul George is still a high-level guy, but I think Tatum has not eclipsed him, but snuck past him.
Can I ask you a question? Didn't you think Paul George early in this year, before he got hurt, was playing fantastic? Like
playing well.
Didn't you think in the playoffs he played really, really, really well last year? I did. I don't know. But okay,
he played well. But look, I think that's an arguable point.
Sure.
Jimmy Butler, I believe, on your list. Arguable point.
Best player on a finals team. And see if Tatum does that ever in his career. I'm not sure he will.
I think Jimmy's got a few years on Jason, but you know, why don't we let that play out?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Who else was the...
The other controversial ones, keep in mind, I had Tatum 18th. I did have him ahead of guys who didn't make the list. I had him ahead of Kyrie. And some people, you know, Kyrie's one of those guys. People are like, oh, he's top 10 guy when he plays. And that's even if Kyrie were playing full time. I had him ahead of Trae Young, a guy who, you know, is a 30-10 guy last year, took me in conference finals. The young players I had ahead of him that I think are the most controversial ones are Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, Ja Morant. I think Ja Morant is going to be unanimous first team All-NBA this year. I think he deserves to be. He's the only guard to me that's a lock. Is Ja Morant. I think Booker, Mitchell, Tatum, you can rank them 1-2-3-3-2-1-2-1-3. I think those guys are very, very close. But
Let me put it this way to you. Like, if you were starting your team today thing, like, if you can pick from Mitchell, Booker, Morant, and Tatum, who are all roughly the same age, you know, give or take a year or two.
So that's a different question. I would go Morant 1 with a bullet. Morant by far, and number two, I would probably take Tatum because if I'm starting a team, I get to take him out of that terrible Celtics culture and maybe actually have him develop a game.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And listen, some teams where it's not all about the future, maybe try to win right now would be a nice thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think, but that wasn't the list. The list, you know, the list was who they are right now, not what they will be. And I also like Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker. We have to respect what they've been able to do in the postseason, by the way. And Tatum, it's not like he's been bad in postseasons. I'm not arguing that. But Donovan, I know he hasn't been to a conference finals, but he has, like, you know, if you lower the threshold for games played, he's like number four all time in playoff points per game. And Devin Booker was, I think, the second best player, but some people would argue the best player on a finalist. Like, I'm not putting him behind, you know, right. Pascal Siakam. You know what I mean? I know once upon a time you had Davis Bertans right neck and neck with him. I didn't do
neck
that.
Neck and neck, right there.
Right there. Right there. So I don't think it's similar, though, to my Jokic opinion. I don't think it's disrespectful. I just think people are so over the top, and on the top 10 player thing, they list 16 guys. There are 16 guys that if you say six of them are not top 10 players, people will get mad at you. But there's only, the thing about a top 10 is there's only 10. And right. Eight of those spots are locked up. So we're really arguing about two openings.
Right. I would say this. I was in Philadelphia on Monday night for the Embiid-Jokic game, Sixers-Nuggets. And I was having these conversations with Nuggets and Sixers coaches who know I'm from Boston. I'm around Tatum all the time. They're looking at, they're talking about him. They're like, listen, if this is like the new normal for Jason Tatum, and it's been like, you know, a month and a half, 2 months now of Jason Tatum playing out of his mind offensive basketball. Like, if this is the new normal for Jason Tatum, where he picks up on this next year and plays like this, he's a top five guy. Like, he's on that path to being a top five.
Top five. Now, top five. Forget the top 10. So, okay, but so let's just follow that logic, okay?
Yes.
Okay. So, again, top five means that we're talking about for next year. Giannis and Luka are locked in, correct? It would mean.
Yes, I would say so.
Okay, they're locked in. I assume, you know, let's kick LeBron out of it. He's going to win the scoring title 30 a game. Let's kick LeBron out
of it. Well, I should say this. I should say this. I say, like, when I say top five, I'm saying, like, top five MVP right there. I'm like, top five MVP voting, like, at that.
Well, no, are you a top five player or are you not? This is where people get it all screwed up.
Well, it, because you're talking about several different kind of categories here. Like, are you, like, no, I don't think Jason Tatum is a top five player in the NBA. Could he be as early as this year? Like, if this Celtics season finishes the way it's been going and Tatum's averaging like 35 for the next month, could he slide into one of those four or five slots in the MVP voting? Absolutely. Those to me are open right now.
Okay, I agree with that. But so let me give you another example there, though. A guy who I did not list, a guy who I listed Tatum ahead of, was not in my top 18, but will get MVP votes this year. DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan will get, you know, he will show up fourth or fifth place on ballots this year. Nobody thinks he's a top five player. Nobody thinks he's a top 10 player. So those to me are different things. Did you have a season individually that was worthy of top five? You know what I mean? Like that season. And are you a top five guy? But I have a lot of questions for you. I don't know. I hijacked your whole thing. I don't even know what you want to start with, but you were at Sixers Nuggets.
Yeah. So well, I want to get to that. I want to get to your, you know, Jokic hatred, which I'd love to know the genesis of all that.
Truth-telling,
apparently. Yeah. Okay.
I'm the only honest man in the media, evidently.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So if you're an honest man in the media, like, deep down, if you're Anthony Davis, do you look back and want to get back in the hot tub time machine to 2019
and say, trade me to Boston and never win a title?
Let me look at what's happening. Let me look at what's happening with the Celtics right now and what's happening with the Lakers. And where am I better off spending the remaining prime years? I don't want to get into that. I want to get into your, you know, I watch your show in the morning whenever
Thanks, buddy.
I certainly watch all the clips whenever you post them on there. You had something recently where you basically absolved LeBron of any blame in this mess, specifically when it comes to roster building here. Like, because you and I both know, we know that LeBron had his hand in building this roster. LeBron had his hand in the acquisition of Russell Westbrook. He did.
No doubt.
Now,
of course.
So you can tell me if I'm characterizing this incorrectly, but how I saw you phrase it on TV was, you shouldn't be listening to him. You know, if you're the executive of the team, you should be doing the deal that you think is in the best interest of the team.
Or you should resign.
Yes.
If you're not going to do your job, then you should probably not get paid for your job. And the idea, here's my question. Who's the coach of the Lakers, Mannix?
Frank Vogel.
Was that LeBron's first choice?
No, not his second either.
Second choice?
No.
Third choice?
Probably not even down to fifth or sixth, frankly, if we're being real about it.
Okay, so they have the ability and repeatedly have ignored him. So here's my point. He didn't get to pick the coach. He wanted Ty Lue. After Ty Lue, he wanted Jason Kidd. Maybe wanted Monty Williams. Got none of them.
Okay, wanted probably wanted Mark Jackson, too. We'll throw Mark Jackson's name into that mix.
Okay, maybe. Sure. But I'm just talking about three guys that are active, right now active head coaches, and all doing excellent jobs. I was a Jason Kidd skeptic. He's doing a good job, man. Monty Williams, obviously excellent. And Ty Lue has been really great. Ty Lue's been really great in the play. So they're allowed to ignore him there. Let me another question. Do you think LeBron gives two shits about the 2027 first round pick?
No.
No.
But should okay, continue. I know where you're going.
No, just let me finish the point.
Yeah.
So he wanted them to make some type of move at the deadline. They didn't. So what we have part and parcel evidence of is that when they want to ignore him, they will. They have and they do on major decisions. So what bothered me was what it felt to me like was this. LeBron was clearly pushing for Russ. And I think the Lakers brain trust, A, we know the Lakers franchise loves stars. So I think part of them wanted Russ too. And I think B, they were like, well, if it doesn't go right, we can just, you know, nicely, kindly, loudly leak to anyone and everyone that'll listen, LeBron made us do it. LeBron, we can't blame us. LeBron made us do it. That's bullshit. That is not the way to run a team. So, yes, of course, listen, LeBron has been bad at picking players since he made tried to convince the Heat to draft Shabazz Napier, and then he left. Like, so, but you, so if it were that every move the Lakers made, well, Ty Lue is the coach, and they did all these things, like, okay, then LeBron gets all the glory and all the blame. But what I think is not fair is that they clearly have decided if and when they're going to let him have major influence. And on the single biggest mistake the franchise has made in a decade, everyone will tell any media member that'll listen, LeBron made us do it. And if he
there were two catastrophic mistakes that the Lakers made in 2021. One was not doing the deal to get Kyle Lowry before the trade deadline in February. Because if they had included Talen Horton-Tucker, they could have got Kyle Lowry for the rest of that year, and they would have been able to re-sign him and have him part of that core for future years. They didn't include THT. That was a problem. Now Horton-Tucker, who's still good, but does not look like the emerging star at the Lakers.
And on that point, maybe the entire postseason goes differently last year if they have 100%. Kyle Lowry. You know what I mean? Maybe LeBron probably can take longer to come back from the ankle because it wasn't right. I agree with you on that 1,000%. Go ahead. And the other mistake was Russ.
That was the other mistake. So here's my question for you, because you know you watch LeBron play as much as anyone. That's why I like having this conversation, because I know you're watching him and you study him. Like maybe it's a question for him after he retires. Like, I want to know why he pushed so hard for this. Because look, LeBron knows what a player like Buddy Hield can do. He knows that even though Buddy is a flawed player, he's a 40-something three-point shooter, and no shooter in the history of LeBron's career has ever struggled playing off him. Like, I mean, you can name a half dozen of them that have thrived playing off of LeBron James. So I just wonder what was going through LeBron's mind, because he saw Russ for decades. He went up against Russ in the bubble in the playoffs. He knows the flaws in Russ's game. So, I can't figure it out why a player with that level of basketball intelligence would look at that situation and say, you know, Buddy Hield plus not having to give up a first, plus who was the piece? Like Harrell they would have been able to keep, I think, in that deal.
And Harrell was no good for them. But whatever. Anything would have been better. Anything would have been better. Okay, so I do have some insight on what LeBron was thinking about Russ. I have some speculation about what LeBron was thinking about Buddy Hield. I'll start with the insight. From what I understand, LeBron incorrectly thought that they would get the good of Russ, which is the energy, the enthusiasm, which is important, especially for an older team, especially for a team that's won championships. This part's speculation. Maybe thought some of that might rub off on Anthony Davis, which is something Anthony Davis is lacking. And and this is the insight that I have, LeBron thought, and the terrible part of his game is going to be minimized because I'm going to be out there and the ball's going to be in my hands. And if I do miss a dozen games or 20 games, then those games, Russ can go do what he did for Washington last year. And that's the other part. I understand nobody, you know, vast majority of people thought this wasn't going to work. And I was one of those people. I was skeptical of it. I wouldn't say I thought it wasn't going to work, but I was skeptical. But what's also true is this fall, compared to Russ post All-Star break for the Wizards last year, was a very effective player. He was inefficient. He had his warts, but he was an All-NBA third team candidate. He was 23-12-12. You know what I mean? He was helpful for a Wizards team. And so the way I understand it is LeBron thought, when I'm out there, I'll control the situation, but you know what, because that sounds patronizing, but it won't get bad because I'll be the one, you know, handling everything. And when I'm not out there, he can carry us to some victories that we otherwise wouldn't get. So that's what I know about the Russ thing. It obviously hasn't worked. And Russ, his confidence is ruined. Everyone's like, how is he missing these shots so badly? It's very obvious. Like he is thinking he doesn't trust himself as a player for the first time in his entire basketball life. That's the only way you miss shots by 4 feet. I mean, he's missing shots by 4 feet, bro. It's sad's the wrong word, but it's tough to watch because he's always been a flawed player. But this is the first year of his career. He's a bad player. He was not a bad player before. He wasn't a championship level player, right? So all those things. Now on the healed side of it, no one's told me this. This is just my pure speculation. I think LeBron has been bitten too many times by the good shooter who's never played in big games. And then you go roll around to the big games and the guy he can't do it. And I think everyone's like, Buddy Hield's 40%. And I think LeBron's like, okay, and he's 0% in the playoffs, right? Because he's played zero playoff games. And we don't give a damn about the regular season because the Lakers thought they're going to win 55 games. What we care about is, are you going to pull a Joe Harris on me? Like Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver was not as bad as some guys have been, but Kyle Korver was a guy who was the most dangerous shooter in the world until the games got the biggest, and then there were some tough spots. Not that he never had good moments, but and there's other guys like that. He had – who was it? He dealt with this with Jordan Clarkson, who wasn't a knockdown shooter. Jordan's now turned himself into a player, but Jordan Clarkson got traded for by the Cavs. You remember this. He was like, oh, it was energy, points, all this stuff. And then the playoffs was like, you got to be kidding me. Rodney Hood, I saw this happen. So I think that's just my speculation. And Mannix, I know people think of me as – this is one of the reasons I like talking with you is we give each other crap. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse. I already did once. I apologize.
Ship sailed.
Okay.
All good.
Okay, no problem. But we give each other a hard time. But we both, I believe, on the vast majority of things, respect each other's opinion on this. And I think – that what I'm laying out on the Buddy Hield thing resonates with you. Like, okay, that logic, like that, if a guy who's played in Sacramento, you are worried, is the Western Conference Finals moment going to be too big? I don't think that's an unfair worry. And I don't think it's ridiculous to say, well, Russ ain't going to be scared. At the very least, we know Russ isn't going to be scared. What we didn't know was that Russ was going to lose all his confidence and become the worst version of himself. So, yes, it didn't work out, and yes, a lot of smart people said it wasn't going to work out, but nobody saw it being this horrible, this bad. I think I read yesterday that Russ post All-Star break is shooting 8% from three and hasn't had a triple-double in 2022, and I know triple-doubles are overrated, except for when it comes to Nikola Jokic, then triple-doubles are the most valuable thing possible. A sixth seed for a team that can't win the title has a bunch of triple-doubles because he has a ball all the time. Let's give him the MVP. That's never gone wrong. But regardless, Russ not having a triple-double in 2022 is kind of wild because he used to get them even when he played terrible, he would get them.
It is wild. Couple things that you said there. I expected Russ not to be this bad, but close to it. Like, I did not believe that a player who had spent the entirety of his career with the ball in his hands would suddenly develop a skill set that was conducive to playing with another player like that. And that's LeBron. Now, LeBron's more pass first. He's going to be looking for Russ in situations. The whole cutting thing came up all the time. Yeah. I never actually believed it. And watching Russ the last two seasons, you're right. At the end of the regular season with Washington, he turned it on. He and Bradley Beal played okay. They made a push into the playoffs. It seemed like there was some positive stick.
And he and Harden before the playoffs were.
A little bit.
But that was a different roster.
The sliding scale of Russ is that in like every shooting metric, he has been going down for years now. I include free throw shooting in that mix.
Yeah, like, you're right.
Like he's just, so when you see that, those need to be just glaring red signs out there.
No, don't do it.
Like the heel thing, like, I mean, I get what you're saying. I do get the idea that like, I don't want a player that freezes, but like to me, the threat of heeled is the most important thing.
Just the gravity
Lakers.
Of it. Of
just
course,
hang out there.
I agree with you. Listen, there's a world that exists where they realize, hey, we're the Los Angeles Lakers. We're going to pay the luxury tax and we're going to keep Alex Caruso, if for no other reason than to flip him for something because he's super valuable. Like, so, but that's that. And where they, you know, they don't trade for Russ and this seems really good. And by the way, a wide open West, because Phoenix is an A-level team, but Phoenix also, the Chris Paul injury thing concerns me, not because he broke his thumb, but just because kind of scarred by it. And it's hard.
Yeah,
play back-to-back 100-game seasons. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Phoenix, and after Phoenix, to me, there's no great team, like, in the Western Conference. So there's a world that exists where the Lakers are right there. That's not the world we live in. But just one last Lakers point that I want to make on this. And it's one of the reasons why I get so irritated with the way some of the media protects Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka. And I get it. Jeannie is friends with a lot of these people. And Pelinka, I understand how this happens, but everyone is just like, is killing LeBron for the Russ trade that obviously he pushed for, but obviously the team signed off on. That was at least, there was like a, you know, a cost benefit analysis there that people had to do and it was done wrong. Letting Caruso walk because you don't want to pay the luxury tax when you're the goddamn Los Angeles Lakers is mortifying. And it was nothing but a check you have to write. It was whatever crypto's paying for the naming rights. Yeah, that covers it. And even if it's just to pay the luxury tax for a year to then flip him for draft picks, fine. You just can't let you are the Lakers. LeBron delivered you a title and delivered you Anthony Davis. You owe it to him and to everybody to not be cheap a year later. Like that's the front office and that's ownership. And all that gets glossed over with the Russ stuff.
Now, on that point, I completely agree. I mean, I look at the Lakers' organizational structure, and I'm flabbergasted. This is one of, if not the most lucrative teams in the NBA with a license to basically print money, and they are being operated by... And look, Pelinka is a good basketball guy. He's been in the business for a while. I get that. And he, you know, did help deliver a championship. But you have empowered Kurt Rambis and Linda Rambis in ways that no team in the NBA ever would. You are apparently, if you're listening to Jeannie Buss, still taking the advice of Magic Johnson. Like, still, you know, taking his temperature.
And Phil Jackson.
And Phil Jackson. I forgot about that one. That was the latest one, yes.
Phil's in there. And Phil's in there in the latest thing. Like,
how about you, Nick, you look at message sending, right? Like, I don't know why LeBron just arbitrarily brought up Sam Presti. That was interesting. Like, he can say the media is making too much of it. He brought up Sam Presti on his own. That was a question about Josh Giddey, and he brought that up 100%. On his own. But if you hear that, like, I can tell you, and I was writing this last year, like, I think Sam Presti's a little bored in Oklahoma City. Like, Sam Presti, if the Celtics job was really open, he would have taken that Celtics job. He would have gone and tried something new. If you're the Lakers, and you just heard LeBron say that, go to Sam Presti. Be like, here's $15 million per year. Your team to run. Like, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you get the best GM in basketball if he's available and wants to do something different? That blows my mind. That is completely shocking to me.
Well, sure. Or here's the other option. And people are going to call me. People will clip this and aggregate this and make fun of me. I don't think you take the job. So, whatever. I'm fine with it. Or the other option is hire Rich Paul. If you're going to say he's running the team, and by the way, when you run a team, who is the GM? Rob Pelinka. What was Rob Pelinka's previous job? The agent of your star player, right? That's how he got the job. So God forbid the current agent of your star player might say, hey, I might have a little more say here than I did in Miami, because that's how they do business here. That's the other hypocritical part of this. They're like, oh, how dare Rich Paul, who delivered the Lakers LeBron James and Anthony Davis, think he should have sway in the organization when they're run by Kobe's agent. But if you're going to say Hughes runs the team, then offer him the gig and see how he does. Have them actually become the clutch Lakers. Otherwise, zip it. But the Presti thing would be great. Presti obviously is, you know, extraordinary what he does. But he also, I think he's kind of stuck. I think he's done everything he can do for Oklahoma City, and the guy who takes over after him be in a good spot. But I don't think he can win there at this point. I think that window's gone.
Yeah, I think he probably, I don't know if he feels that, but I think that he's ready for something new. And whether it was the Celtics, the Lakers, throw a boatload of money at him and offer him something new.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I want to finish with your palpable disdain for Nikola Jokic. It just bleeds through the screen, bleeds through your podcast, bleeds through every outlet you appear on.
Yeah,
I watched him play. I've seen him play live this season probably 3 or 4 times.
He looked like the MVP last night or on Monday, did he?
Yes.
He looked like the MVP to you? Oh, give me a break.
What? Okay, like lost in the outstanding game by Bones Highland, which was fantastic for him. 22 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists. Probably could have had 4 or 5 more assists if guys made shots around him. Pretty damn great game by Nikola Jokic.
Oh, stop it. Okay, see, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about.
It's not even advanced stats. There's no advanced stats in that. There's points, rebounds, assists, field goal percentage, all that.
No, that's fine. I don't know. I don't think the field goal percentage was great last night. I know the turnovers weren't. I don't have the box score in front of me. I do know that he was on the bench for the first 7 minutes of the fourth quarter, which is when the Nuggets turned the game around.
That's what like DeMarcus was making. Like he made two threes or something like that.
No,
like,
DeMarcus, like one of those. Listen, it was crazy though, because the reason Jokic is allowed to win MVP even as a 6 seed is because the team around him is so just awful and terrible. Meanwhile, Luka, who's just, what does Luka have going for him? Oh, he's just a better player. His teammates around him are of the same level that Jokic's are, and they're the 5 seed. But set that aside because it's very close, and those seeds could flip at some point. My issue, right now, if I had an MVP ballot, and I don't, you do, I'm sure, because listen, God forbid I get an NBA ballot. I spin my own. People aren't seeing a video. I am wearing a $200 NBA-branded hoodie. There is no team. It's just the Jerry West logo. And Mannix, I am wearing the matching sweatpants. I love this goddamn league. And no one will give me a vote. That's fine. So if I had a ballot, my ballot would. But I think Embiid and Jokic hurt their MVP cases last night. Embiid could put a stranglehold on the award. He had a bad fourth quarter. Jokic made one basket in the fourth quarter, and they made the comeback without him. And so here's my ballot, but set last night aside, last night didn't change it significantly at all, or Monday night, pardon me.
Yeah.
Is Luka 1, Giannis 2, Embiid 3, and then Jokic, Morant 4, 5, 5, 4.
You are making, so, hold on, you are making, you are crediting Luka for things you're not crediting Jason Tatum for. Like Luka, if you look at Luka's numbers took off like after January 1st. Before then, what were we talking about with Luka? Came in a little bit out of shape.
What are the numbers for the season?
Okay.
For the season, he's better.
All right, well, he's better. I don't have him in front of me, but they're not measurably, they're not enormously bad. But Luka's MVP case.
I'm certain Luka's assists are better than Tatum.
They are better than Tatum's, yes.
Ain't complaining about Luka's assists. I tell you that much right now.
Playmaker.
And the only player in the top 25 with a lower field goal percentage than Tatum is Steph. So, like, his efficiency's been off. But I don't want to talk about Tatum right now.
Correct, yes.
Let's stay on Jokic for a moment.
Yes.
So, I just want to go through quickly the history of my alleged Jokic hate. It started last year when I said I'd vote him second in MVP. And people said, I must not be watching basketball. And I said, okay, I would vote Chris Paul first. And then a gift from the basketball gods gave us Suns Nuggets, and Chris Paul swept his ass out. And then these folks doubled down on it.
Just Chris Paul. Of course, just Chris Paul was doing that, right?
No, but it was okay. But there's a weird thing we're doing with Jokic where the Jokic fans want to have it both ways. They want to tell me he is the best player in the league and tell me, of course, he cannot be blamed at all if his team were to lose in round one this year. That's not how it works in this league.
Yeah, but
that's
you can't
never
vote.
How it works.
You can't vote before round one. You have to vote before round one. So
No. Okay, no. I'm not talking about the MVP voting should be changed based on the playoffs. But it's that you could simultaneously be the best player in the league and expected to lose in round one. When has that ever been the case? Tell me. Give me the instance in NBA history when it's been the case. It's been the case.
Russ in Oklahoma City. That was
a bad vote, though. And nobody thought nobody was arguing he was the best player in the league. People were arguing he had the best season. People are arguing Jokic is the best player in basketball. You've got some of the allegedly smarter basketball people telling
I wouldn't make that argument. I wouldn't make the best player in basketball argument. That's because it's a different one. It's not the same argument. The most valuable player argument for a guy who has, and look, they could finish as high as like the third seed. Like you're penciling
them
in.
They also are
six.
A game out of the play-in.
Correct. There's a lot, but look, Porter Jr. is probably going to come back at some point. I have no idea about Murray. They're not talking about him. But I think if they finish in like that four seed or even the three seed, how do you not vote for him then? To go an entire season without two stars and play that way. Like you look at those guys, and look, I think those guys, Nick, on that team, and I give Tim Connelly a ton of credit for like identifying Bones Highland with the 26th pick in the draft, just like he found Will Barton off the scrap heap, just like he found Monty Morris off the scrap. It doesn't even include Jokic, a second round pick. But like, I watched these games, and even last night or Monday night, Jokic makes these guys better. Like Jokic
is
finding them in good spots.
Of course, that's why he's one of the eight best players in the sport, and that's why I would have voted him second in MVP last year and fourth or fifth this year. But there's a weird thing going on. Because Murray and Porter Jr. are on the roster but aren't playing, that it's like they're like, oh, he doesn't have a second and third best player. Well, Luka doesn't have Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. either. And it's like, but they're not. So what Luka is, you understand what I'm saying? It's like because the Nuggets could be a great team. They could be a great team, but they're missing two guys. So now they're, to me, the Nuggets and Mavs rosters with Porter Jr. And Jamal Murray gone, they're very similar. Two exceptional, number ones, and then a bunch of guys. But, like, because nobody's injured for Luka, it's just this is the team they've built, and because they screwed up on the Kristaps thing, he doesn't get that benefit of the doubt. But I just want to dig just further into the Jokic thing for a moment. Because I did have Bobby Marks tweet to me, there are a lot of GMs take Jokic number one overall for every player alive. Those GMs should be fired. that's not a legitimate opinion to have in a world where Giannis exists, let alone Luka, let alone if you're like, I think I get another 6 years out of Kevin Durant. Like, those guys are on a different level. They set LeBron out of it. And then you've got people throwing the people that throw the stats at me, the advanced stats, that say, well, he's having the best season ever. And what amazing thing is, it just trumps the season, the second best season ever, which was Jokic last year. That tells you what the people don't understand that are so married to it. If that is what your algorithm spits out, then there's a fly in the soup. Then you've got to tweak it, because it's the same thing that says, hey, you know what? We've done that. We've crunched the numbers, and David Robinson was a better player than Shaquille O'Neal. Get out of here with that. Stop it. And so that's what's frustrating me, is that there is, and Manich, you know this. I know the numbers. I respect them. I'm not a guy that's like, oh, this nerd's ruining the game. My best friend in the league is Daryl Morey. So of course I know the numbers, but it's over the top. And now I'm going to say one other Jokic thing I want your opinion on, because you're a voter. And everyone says this shouldn't count, but I think it should. Okay. So 12 guys ever, back-to-back MVPs. And I know them off the top of my head because I've talked about this. We'll do it in reverse order. Giannis, Steph, LeBron, Steve Nash. Remember that name.
Yep.
Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Moses Malone, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell. Those are the 12. So 11 of them are 11 of the 15 greatest players ever. And then there's Steve Nash. And people look back and they're like, yeah, we probably shouldn't have given Nash those back-to-back MVPs. Honest question, if Jokic wins it this year, do you think in 20 years, when you're asked about your MVP votes, that Jokic will be in that category of the 11 guys I mentioned, or if he's going to be over in the corner with Steve Nash, like, yeah, not sure how we got into this club.
No, I think he's in that category. I think 20 years from now, he's in that category. He's got a game that is going to age exceptionally well. There's no reason to believe he's not going to be able to play at this type of level for 3 or 4 more years, at least. He's 26, I believe, right now.
Wait, the group 40. With Giannis, LeBron, Jordan, Magic, yes. Bird, it, with
if
them?
His career has been short so far, Nick. Like, he hasn't played that long.
He's going to get there. You think he's going to get there?
Yes.
So you think he's going to win multiple championships?
Well, I mean, championships are difficult. Like, I mean, Barkley's an all-time great player. Like,
No. But Barkley didn't win no back-to-back MVPs. Stop it. I gave you the 11 names. I gave you the 11 names.
All right, Giannis got one championship.
And I would bet my life he wins more.
Okay.
He wins more.
I can't project out on what the Denver Nuggets are going to do with Jokic.
But you shouldn't need to. If you're one of the 15 greatest players ever, it doesn't matter. You win a bunch of rings. All of them did. They weren't all in great situations. Moses Malone wasn't in no great situation. I guess Moses is the one example. He only has the one ring. He went to like 4 finals, though. He won 3 MVPs. That was also a weird time. It was the ABA, NBA, all that stuff. But no. We're not talking about a Hall of Famer now. We're not talking about a top 75 guy. We're talking about you're in a room with Kareem, Michael, and LeBron.
Yep.
Get out of here. You don't believe Jokic is going to be there. And here's how I know. We get Grizzlies Nuggets in round one. Who you picking, Mannix?
Oh, in this season? No, Grizzlies in round one.
Oh, it's just... he's a back-to-back MVP. He's going to be a Pantheon player. But you can't ask
We're not going to get that round one. We'll probably wind up with...
Right.
Nuggets,
as of
Mavericks.
Today, we would.
How about Nuggets, Mavericks? If we wind up with that, I'm taking Denver in that series.
By the way, okay, that's fine. I think Mavs are going to make the finals, but as of today, Mannix, we would get Grizzlies Nuggets. That's 3-6.
Are they?
But it,
3 6? Yeah. All right. Yeah. It,
but you got
either way. Either way, I can't. I can't be. I can't. Like, I look at Jokic at 26 years old playing at this level, and again, I say this. His game is going to age. It's not above the rim. It's not overly based on physicality. It's based on finesse.
Yeah, I agree. He's not a very good athlete.
He's not a very good athlete at all.
I agree.
I hope he develops a better three-point shot in the coming years, because he loves to shoot it, and it doesn't go in very often. So,
oh, my God. Everyone's gone crazy. They're going to do the Nash thing again. It's so dumb. We are in real time.
I haven't decided. Nash thing again. I won't tell you one thing. Like, a lot of what influences me a lot when I vote
is where a team finishes in the standings. So I am watching very closely, like, how the Sixers finish. Like, they have not played well against good teams. Like, they've they cleaned up early on the Knicks and, you know, whoever they were playing. If they slip a little bit into, like, that five seed, that could be a problem for Embiid on my ballot.
Yep, throw them out.
If Jokic, if the Nuggets go up to three, that's going to be have a big influence on my ballot as well. So,
can, all right, that's fine. Can I, if you're, and I understand my Luka opinion is outside of the mainstream here.
Yes.
I don't think Luka's going to win it. I think he has a strong, I think people, just like Steph was so good the first 15 games, his name still gets brought up in the MVP discussion, even though this is arguably the worst season he's had in a decade. Like, legit, like the, Steph has not been up to his standards this year. I'm not talking trash on him, but it speaks to how great he is. But his name still gets brought up. Luka was so out of it for the first month of the season. It's like he can't get himself back into it, even though it's not just how he's played lately. It's just the totality of the season. The numbers are out of this world. The team's winning all of that. And he did look rejuvenated by getting Kristaps the hell out of there.
He did.
Like, I don't know if Latvia and Slovenia have some historical feud that I didn't know about. They sure didn't seem like each other.
I was hearing from Mavericks people very early on that process going, it's not going to work.
So here's what my plea to you as a voter. If it's a tough call, you know what vote you're going to sleep well at night with? If you vote for the guy who in the last game that actually mattered dropped 50 and won a title. And probably should have won the MVP last year. You're not going to, I'll tell you this much, a vote for Giannis, you are not going to regret. And I'm saying I'd vote for Luka, but there's no worry of Chris Mannix's grandchildren being like, Papa, why'd you screw this up if you voted for Giannis?
Yeah.
I'd probably be the two seed. He's going to average, you know, more points than minutes this year. Seems good. Like, he's pretty special. I'd vote
special.
For him, maybe.
He is.
Do you think, do you have a, can I ask you this? And I know you said 20 minutes and I talked for an hour.
Good.
Right now, my finals pick, I have officially abandoned my preseason. You know, I was on 11 straight years of picking LeBron to win the title. So I want to break it. But it's, I did something I never do and I wrote them off. So I have, my preseason pick was Bucks Lakers. It is now Bucks Mavs. What was your preseason pick? And why are you now picking the Celtics?
I am not picking the Celtics. The Celtics against physical teams worry me, but that's a conversation for another podcast. My preseason pick, I believe, was Bucks Lakers to start the season.
Same with me. Much as you thought the Lakers wasn't going to work, you still thought like I did. But they have LeBron and AD.
They'll probably
figure it out. Yeah.
You know, now they're in another world. But like now, I would say, and I'm like, everything to me is based on the mandate in New York and Kyrie. If Kyrie's 100% healthy, I'm picking the Nets, no matter where they finish in the standings. I think they get to the final. Durant is just an otherworldly. Like, he is an insane offensive player. And Kyrie, you could see it. Like, in recent games, when he's on, he is the perfect complement to him. Like, he puts up some massive numbers out there. And I think Simmons will give them something before the end of the season. But I'm going to go Bucks and Suns to come out. Like,
Bucks and Suns. Rematch.
Bucks and Suns. Rematch.
I like it. You know, Durant, and we should say one thing about Durant before we go.
Yeah.
Because I watched that game Sunday, and I, you know, one of the things that happened in that game that I could not believe was Durant, when he got to 53, I'm not sure who, I think it was Doris Burke, I'm not sure who was calling the game, said he was one off his career high. And I said, one off his career high? I was like, wow. The most naturally gifted scorer of his generation's career high is 54. Meanwhile, a guy of the same generation, his career, his month high is 56. Like, that's interesting. Yeah, LeBron. So you're telling me LeBron James in year 19, his season high is higher than Kevin Durant, the greatest scorer ever's career high. I mean, that's just one of those things that makes you think. It's kind of surprising.
It does. It's just like Jason Tatum, 60. That was a big number for him. Tied Larry Bird.
That was a big number.
Tied Larry Bird.
That was a big number. Nick. I think it's probably on 48 shots. I got to go look at the box score. I love you, man.
Check out What's Right. You can subscribe to that podcast everywhere. Nick, of course, first things first every morning. On your podcast, Nick, consider the segment that I would be happy to join for called Would You Trade Jaylen Brown For? If you decide to do that segment, I will happily come in prepared with a list.
Before I go, I have to say this. About Jaylen Brown. Good contract. It was, you know what I mean? I was wrong. I was wrong about Jaylen Brown. I underrated Jaylen Brown.
Yes.
I was right about everything else Danny Ainge related, but I was wrong about the Jaylen Brown contract. I'll talk to you later, man.
Good to talk to you, Nick.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.